Now, back to The Dirt. Here's Lori Schultz.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to The Dirt tonight, and I'm really excited because we have a great show lined up for you. And today I'm joined with my co-host, Chris. What? Oh, I'm Chris. Chris Singleton. He is my new Team Dirt video, tech, and board op, and my co-host for tonight. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm excited. This is your first day actually board opping for me tonight.
100%. Yeah, it is. Last week I was just working with your video feed online.
Yeah. Always. We're always working on that.
Mm-hmm.
So tonight we actually have a great guest, McNair Azard, and I'm not sure if he called in yet.
I believe he's on the line now, yeah.
Oh, awesome. So in a little while, in just a few seconds, we'll get him on. But I just wanted to give everybody a little information beforehand. I actually ran across McNair Azard when we were at the Healing Arts Festival. And that's actually where I met Chris. So it was really interesting. He had a seminar on UFOs. However, I mean, that's just kind of just barely touching the tip of the iceberg when it comes to McNair. And he's got a lot of interests. He's ordained a Methodist minister. He's a longtime student of the Ageless Wisdom teachings. He just has a lot of different things to offer as far as information and teaching and speaking. And so anyway, we're really excited to have him on The Dirt tonight. A little bit later at the end of the show, we actually will have Bonnie Sorber calling in with our healthy vegan recipe that Zachary Teague just loves. He always gets into the vegan recipes. So so we're really excited to get McNair on here with us. And so McNair, are you there with us on The Dirt?
I'm here.
Hi. Thank you so much. Welcome to The Dirt.
Thank you very much.
I'm really excited to have you on tonight. When I ran across you, I actually didn't really understand or know the extent to all of, you know, the things that you're, you know, involved in as far as your other teachings or speakings and everything else. And I just find you really interesting, and I think we're going to have a wonderful show. I think you have a lot to offer as far as information, experience, wisdom. And so, again, welcome aboard.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Thank you. So to start out, maybe you want to tell everybody a little bit about how it is that you began kind of speaking in the UFO community.
Well, it goes back a ways, just kind of serendipitously. I was visiting, I'm originally from North Carolina, and I was visiting a friend of mine in Chapel Hill, where I went to undergraduate college, and he was a collector of books, as I am, and he had a book on his shelf. Oh, gosh, this is back in 1980, which, you know, I just happened to see and read, and it was called The Reappearance of the Christ and the Masters of Wisdom. And the following summer, that was Christmas 1980. The following summer, I went to a seminar talk in Anaheim, California, and heard a British author, Benjamin Krim, speak. And he spoke about the events that are unfolding right now on our planet. And he publishes also a magazine called Share International. And I've just been volunteering with that organization locally, first in Colorado and then here in California for the past 30 years, lending my energy and time to get this story out about what's happening on our planet right now. And the UFO part is just part of a much larger story having to do with the changes and the evolution on our planet, and specifically what we're calling the gathering of the forces of light.
Okay, so like you said, it's just the tip of the iceberg. And so when I first was, you know, I saw you there, and I was interested, but I was at a booth, and so I couldn't go into your seminar. I kind of Googled you, looked you up, and everything like that. And the way that you present the UFOs and the, you know, outer space beings, it's the way that I believe more so. I mean, I just don't feel like they're just some like invaders. I feel like they have something to do with spirituality and helping our planet and everything else. Well, some. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there could be negative and positive. But so why don't you explain to everybody a little bit about that, like how your connection with your spirituality to the UFOs?
Well, you know, a lot of spiritual teachings, I mean, we gravitate to what rings true for us, and this whole story about the world teacher and subsequently the information I learned about the UFOs had the ring of truth for me. And it gives both parts of the story give me hope for our future. If it wasn't for my involvement in this and what I feel to be true about this story, I wouldn't have much hope for humanity right now, because we're in quite a mess, and we've created this mess ourselves, and we don't seem to be able to find a way out. And spirituality, to me, is much larger than religion. Spirituality has to do, in my mind, anything that which elevates us beyond our current level of consciousness in a positive way, and not only ourselves individually, but collectively as humanity. And the UFO, the space people, if I could call them that, are here to help humanity. They've been visiting our planet for thousands of years, but especially more so in the past 50 to 60 years have they been coming, because they know we are in a mess and they're here to help us.
Now, when you were growing up, did you grow up Methodist?
I grew up just regular, everyday Protestant, you know, went to church. I had, even back when I was a young child, I had an interest, and I think you saw a couple of interviews on YouTube about my interest in death and dying and reincarnation, but even as a young child, I had an interest in that sort of things. But other than that, you know, I grew up traditional Protestant, went to seminary after I graduated from undergraduate school, got my master's degree at Iliff School of Theology in Denver, and focused on hospice and death and dying there, but also reading at the same time New Age thought, as well as texts from other religions like Buddhism and Hinduism and so forth.
Okay.
And the Ageless Wisdom teaching.
Because I would say, like, when we were growing up, to be thinking outside the box of religion was almost like basically like a no-no. I mean, like, if you said stuff like that, people would be just like, you better get back to church, you know?
Yeah, well, certainly I wasn't as mature in my thought back then as I am now. You know, it was kind of childhood interest at the time, and it wasn't until I got much older that I discovered information about what is really happening on our planet.
And how do you think that most of the information you discovered has been revealed to you? Has it been through, you know, like the book that you read, or has it been through your own spiritual, you know, enlightenment, like, you know, through meditation, different things like that, or is it just from studying the...
Well, certainly, I think meditation can get one in touch with one's own inner spiritual higher self, and certain revelations, you know, when you read about it, you connect, if you read it about truth outside of that, outside of your meditations, then you can connect with it much easier, I think, and it makes more sense to you, but... That book that I read back in 1980 by Benjamin Krim, it kind of opened a doorway for me into the Ageless Wisdom as well. Now, Krim is not any kind of a spiritual guru or leader or anything like that. He's an artist by trade, family man. But when I heard him talk in Anaheim, I should say that day, the Hunger Project, which is a nonprofit educational group, was giving a morning seminar at the convention center, and Krim was lecturing in the afternoon. And before every lecture, and I've since sat through many of these, he is overshadowed by...
Oh, McNair?
Go ahead.
I am so sorry that we're going to be going to a break, so hold that thought.
Yeah.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. You're listening to The Dirt, and we have our special guest, McNair Azard, and he is here with us. And right before the break, we were talking about when he was listening to Benjamin Krim speaking. Are you there, McNair?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
And I guess I should say, just to make a long story short, you know, I read his books over the years and been involved in giving talks and doing interviews, that sort of thing, and writing articles. And the information that I read has since been confirmed to me in my own through my own experiences. And, you know, nothing really speaks to the veracity of something you might read as when you can experience it in your own daily life, so to speak.
Exactly. I agree with that. So when you were there listening to him speaking, that was just one of the first steps in basically your enlightenment or your higher spiritual beliefs.
I certainly wouldn't call myself enlightened. I know you've used that word. I don't think you mean it the way I'm thinking, but I just want to clarify. I'm just an everyday person, just like anybody else who... and part of a larger group around the world of volunteers who are sharing, getting this information out.
Okay.
But that particular day in Anaheim, I was meditating probably about five rows from the stage, and he is overshadowed by the energy from the world teacher, and the world teacher uses him and gives a blessing to everyone in the audience for about 30 minutes. And I'm not psychic or anything like that, and so. But I had an experience that day when I felt this tremendous energy in my heart center, where it's like when you see a film, a fast film of a rose closed bud opening, and my heart. I felt that in my heart, and that image came to mind, and I opened my eyes, and the whole room had kind of this fine, vibrant atmosphere, like dew in the air, dewdrops or something. I don't know how to explain
That's
it.
That's beautiful.
You know? And he was looking right at me at that time in my direction. And so that passed, and I listened to the talk and what he was saying about the world teacher's concerns about the planet and what was going to get us out of our mess rang true for me. You know, and I said right there and then, well, I think I'll give my time and energy to this. And subsequently, I've been involved in it for quite a while and continue to believe that it's really one of the last hopes for humankind, you know, if we're going to make it through what we're going through right now.
What do you, when you say the troubles that we've gotten ourselves into, what are you referring to when you say that?
Well, humanity is going through a crisis right now, and it's basically a crisis of identity. We don't know who we are, and we've lost touch with who we are and our interconnectedness with our source and with other people. And this crisis of identification is creating all these problems we have in the world, such as the disparity between the living standards of the developing world and the developed world, what we're doing to the environment, all these senseless things that don't have to exist, we continue to propel forward with, you know, without seeing a way what harm we're doing to the planet. And I'm speaking generally, not specifically mm-hmm. about specific groups or people, but in general, you know, if we don't do an about face, we will destroy ourselves, I think, you know. If not through the use of the atomic bomb, certainly we will destroy the planet to where it's uninhabitable.
Right.
So it's a major crisis. And at these periods of crisis in human history, and there's been different types of crises throughout human history, a great teacher has always come to reveal a new teaching to help humanity take a step forward towards the new time. I mean, historically we know them, some mythological figures like Hercules and more Hermes and then Rama and Krishna and the Christ 2,000 years ago and the Buddha. All of these are great teachers who have come before to show humanity the way forward when it was going through a crisis time.
So who are you referring to when you say the teacher would bless the audience through Benjamin Krem for the 30 minutes? Who are you referring to?
I'm referring to the head of that group of Masters of Wisdom. His personal name is Maitreya, and he holds the office of the world teacher. As we go through the evolutionary process on planet Earth, we have thousands and thousands of lifetimes gradually learning and becoming more perfect. And as we reach the end of the evolutionary path, we enter what's called the path of initiation, and there's five major initiations. The fifth initiation is basically we graduate from schoolhouse Earth. We've learned everything we have to learn, and we can go on to other planets and other higher evolutions after that. But fortunately for humanity, a group of those who have evolved to that point choose to stay behind to help humanity, and they're called the Masters of Wisdom. And there are approximately 60-some masters associated with the human evolution who stay behind to help humanity. And so the head of that group of highly advanced individuals, like you and I, only they have become perfect, perfected themselves, the head of that group is the office of the world teacher. The rest of the masters look to him as their guru, so to speak. And he is the one that has been putting his energy through British author Benjamin Krim, but he's also the one that is in the world physically now, hasn't come out onto the public arena as Maitreya, but is here as a teacher, not as a religious leader, but as a teacher for all humanity, religious and non-religious, here to show us the way forward if we choose. I mean, our free will won't be infringed, and he, when he comes out onto the public arena, he'll be invited and he will speak, and he will say, if we keep going this way through greed and selfishness and individualism in the sense that we fight against one another for the goods of the world, we'll destroy ourselves, or we can choose the path of cooperation and sharing. So he is in the world, but he is also a group of his masters. The Masters of Wisdom will also be in the world, and some of them are already in the world. And as we incarnate over and over again over the next age of Aquarius, we will see them at the center, so to speak, of our planetary life, helping humanity as teachers, some in positions of government, some in positions of economy, as the UN and so on, not infringing our free will because that is sacrosanct, but we, once humanity makes this momentous choice, which I think it will, to share and live together in cooperation, then we will start to build a golden civilization under the tutelage, if you will, of the Masters of Wisdom. But this is unlike any previous time in human history, really, because during the time of Atlantis, 85,000 years ago, the Masters did work openly among humanity, but they retreated to the remote mountain and desert regions of the world at the fall of Atlantis, and that's where they've remained for all these thousands of years, gradually every now and then making a foray into the world to give a teaching, and that's where all these great teachers have come in the past, is from this body of teachers called the Masters. They will send one of their own into the world to reveal a new teaching forward. And that's who is in the world now and is also the one who has been sending his energy through Krim. But also one of the, Benjamin Krim also has a direct telepathic relationship with one of these masters who is a disciple of the world teacher. And through his master, he has been kept up to date about the coming into the world of the world teacher and has been given a series of teachings over the years about what's happening on the planet, as well as the information about the UFOs.
Well, we are about to go to another break, and when we come back, I know I wanted to talk to you about UFOs and everything like that, so we will get to that, but
great.
You bring me to just one question when we come back regarding this. Obviously, then, you did say many lives, so I just wanted to know your opinion on reincarnation and death and dying. So
Okay. Everybody
stay tuned for McNairizard, and we will be back in just a few minutes with The Dirt. Everybody, you're listening to The Dirt, and I am having a wonderful conversation with McNairizard, and he is just basically talking about his spiritual beliefs, his you know, how he's obtained some of his information and just how he's gotten where he's at right now and today, and just, you know, sharing with us a lot, actually, and we really appreciate it. And McNair, I was just wondering if you could tell me what your thoughts are on reincarnation or rebirth.
Well, certainly the way that I grew up in the Protestant church, it wasn't part of the teaching when I go on Sunday to church, or my dad would make us go. He didn't talk about that, but it wasn't until later on in life, actually after college, that I first read one of Edgar Cayce's books. Actually, it was his biography, There is a River, and I think for a lot of people, Edgar Cayce is kind of a door opener onto the spiritual path, as he was for me, and that's where I first learned about the teaching of reincarnation, and subsequently read about it more with the Alice Bailey teachings and through her master, D.K., who gave a series of teachings through her, and he talks a lot about reincarnation and the law of karma, law of cause and effect. And it just started making sense to me that, it explained a lot of the questions that I had about why some people seem to be born with certain maybe physical problems, you know, and other people are born well, and some people seem to have everything go right for them, and yet they seem to be a bad person, you know, in terms of morals and ethics and stuff. And it made sense to me that this would explain, you know, why some people never seem to get their just reward while they're on this planet, either what we might term their good reward or their bad reward. And reincarnation made sense to me that it was the divine balance, you know, that equalized everything. And it made sense to me because it didn't ever seem right that one lifetime, you go through this lifetime learning and growing for what? Just to die and not have anything else happen. And the idea of reincarnation certainly struck true to me. I mean, you don't need it in order to evolve spiritually, but it's certainly for me, and I was curious about it, it made a lot of sense.
And but also how so many people's lives are different lengths, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you add that factor in there as well.
Exactly. And we don't know what's gone before in someone's life. Maybe what they are going through now. And to understand the law of reincarnation, you have to understand also about the law of karma. And it talks about it in the Bible about law of cause and effect, eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, you know, and that sort of thing. These were references to the law of karma, that what ye sow, so shall ye reap. And it may not be this lifetime, it may be five lifetimes from now that you reap what you're sowing now. But according to what I understand is that we certainly reap more good karma than we do bad karma. But we're always building karma for ourselves, and it's only as we go through the evolutionary process and come back in each time and work off more and more karma that we gradually dissipate all of our karma and become perfect, perfect ourselves. But that's how we become perfect, is through the reincarnational process.
And I always think it's interesting, too, with near-death experiences, when you're thinking about, a life coming back or whatever, and it's interesting, like a near-death experience, I mean, they left, but they came back in this body, but, you know, it's just an interesting concept,
yeah.
Like the near-death experience.
Yeah, in fact, one time I interviewed Raymond Moody, who was kind of the forerunner of studying near-death experiences, and he said, because I asked him about reincarnation, what does this have to do with reincarnation? And he felt like that the near-death experiences were kind of the doorway into the beyond, you know, that they didn't go quite far enough to prove or not prove about reincarnation, but that because people would come back and they could tell their experiences, but certainly they were a part of that path that we take when we leave the body.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I know of so many people, too. Like, actually, I know of somebody personally who had a near-death experience, and, I mean, he met, like, spirit guides and family members that were on a panel and just everything. I mean, I don't know how anybody could deny any of that. You know,
yeah.
There's just too many people who have had that common experience. Now, have you ever Do you believe that, obviously, we've had enough conversation to know that you believe that UFOs are real, but have you ever seen one yourself?
Oh, yes, I have been blessed in that way, not because I'm anybody special, but I just maybe had to happen to be in the right place at the right time. And I've actually seen two within the past 2.5 years.
Wow.
And they were all in Northern California. I'll tell you about them if you like.
I would love that. And where in Northern California?
Well, I was working in Los Altos. The first one, I was working in Los Altos, and I was staying in a hotel on the third floor. And when I went out on the little balcony, it was not on the street. It was like behind a building, so it was dark. There were no street lights. And I was getting ready to turn in for the night, but I wanted to take my dog out for a walk before we went to bed so he could do his business.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to see if it was still raining because it had been raining all evening. And there was a low-hanging clouds. So I went out. It had stopped raining. I looked up, and I saw this orange globe just below the ceiling of the clouds, kind of moving along slowly, no noise, no engines, no flashing lights, and it kind of did a zigzag and then shot up through the clouds. And I was beside myself. I got all excited. I ran back in the hotel room, turned the light off, ran back out again on the balcony thinking, oh, maybe it'll come back. Well, at that same time, this big lumbering jet was flying in the same direction, probably towards San Francisco Airport. Engines blaring, you know, flashing lights. And so I knew what I had seen was not an airplane.
Right.
And I contacted Benjamin Krim shortly thereafter, and his master confirmed that it was a UFO from Mars. And the second one was just probably 2 months ago. Maybe it's something about my dog. Maybe he attracts these experiences, but I was taking him outside. And it was at night, and before we turned in, and I looked up through the trees, and I saw this triangle of light with a red, a yellow, and a white light on it, and it just shot across the sky and just disappeared. Didn't go behind the next door house or anything. It just vanished just like that. And again, I sent an email to him, and it was confirmed for me.
Wow.
So, and you just know it when you see it. I mean, there's in Northern California, especially the Bay Area, there's all sorts of airplanes flying all the time. So I know that these were different than that.
Yeah, and I've actually had experiences too.
Like, have you?
Yeah, so I agree with you. When you do have an experience, you know for sure.
Yeah.
And nobody can tell you that you didn't see what you saw, you know.
Exactly. And if a person goes to YouTube, of course you have to use your discrimination because people now can create a lot of visual things with software and stuff, but there are quite a number of sightings that people are able to tape on, and they put it up on YouTube of people's experiences with the UFOs now.
I know, it's so amazing. So where do you think that they come from? The ones that, like, okay, you said Mars on yours, but all of them are?
Well, I think our information, and some people may disagree with this, but our information is that first of all of our planets in the solar system are inhabited. And the UFOs that visit planet Earth come primarily from Mars, Venus, Jupiter, and Saturn. All of our planets in our solar system are interrelated. And they, you know, brotherhood and sisterhood is at paramount in their consciousness. On these beings on these other planets, for the most part, are so highly evolved spiritually as well as their technology is thousands of years ahead of ours that they are able to visit our planet in a matter of minutes, whereas it takes us, you know, it would take us a year or a year and a half or more to get to Mars or something at this point. So they come primarily from those planets, and those planets are teeming with life.
Do you think we're the least advanced of all?
Each planet goes through what's called 7 rounds, and each round is a higher level, higher state of consciousness. Now, I don't know exactly what happens in the physical sense to a planet, but each planet goes through 7 rounds, and our planet is in the middle of the 4th round. Something like Venus is in the 7th round. So they are highly, highly evolved.
Right.
And there supposedly are different zones on Mars, and like the lower zone, you wouldn't want to be hanging out there on a dark night because they aren't very good people, but they aren't allowed to travel. It's only the ones that are spiritually advanced who are travel the solar system and are here to help us.
Okay. And what about, I mean, maybe you're not familiar with this, and maybe it's not even true, but I've heard a lot of people say that on the backside of the moon that they think there could be other beings set up there, and that's why we never see that side.
I've heard that, too. I don't know about that. I mean, supposedly the moon long, long time ago was inhabited, but so I suppose there could be, but I don't know much about that.
Because you would think we would go back. I mean, it's not like us to not go back and forth somewhere we've successfully went. It seems like we kind of got sent away. I mean, you never hear about astronauts really talking too much about anything. If an average person went to the moon, you know, first thing they'd do is start selling pieces of it. You know, oh, I'll sell you a lot here, I'll sell you a lot there. You know what I mean? So why aren't we doing that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. In fact, I mean, one key point about understanding about life on other planets is our scientists can identify three states of matter. We've got the dense physical, we've got liquid physical, and we've got gaseous physical. But above that gaseous physical, they don't know about. There are four more layers of finer and finer vibrations of matter called the etheric planes. And this is where the life on the other planets takes place. In fact, the spaceships that visit our planet are made in etheric matter. But if the beings on these spacecraft want us to see their UFOs, their spacecraft, they just simply lower the vibration of the craft so that it comes within our visual sight, and then they can disappear by raising the vibration back. So if you were to go to, say, Venus in the physical body or Mars, you wouldn't see anybody unless you had what's called etheric vision, which means you could see on those higher levels of matter.
Right.
Now, our scientists don't even have the instruments to measure that sort of thing. So that's why when you talk about UFOs being on etheric planes, they say, well, you can't be proved because there's nothing there to see. But there is, according to Ageless Wisdom teachings, there are those higher levels of matter.
Exactly. Like what they want to say is, no, there's no life that exists there. And just because we can't see it.
Yeah. And in fact, I'll tell you something that's very disconcerting is, the UFOs started coming more and more after the 1940s, after the discovery of the nuclear bomb. And, you know, we have these hundreds of nuclear power plants around the planet that, unbeknownst to our scientists, are constantly pumping nuclear pollution into our atmosphere. Well, the scientists say, well, no, most of them are safe. They're not doing that, but they don't have the instruments to measure where this pollution is going, which is onto the etheric planes. And that etheric, that energy, that pollution on the etheric planes affects the mental body of humanity. And that's why we're seeing more and more people at younger ages with dementia and Alzheimer's. And it's very unfortunate. And that's one of the things that the space people are here to help us with, is that within karmic law, they are mopping up through implosion devices that they have a lot of this nuclear pollution that's in our atmosphere.
Wow. That's a really scary concept. I mean, just the fact that we are all armed to not just take out our quote-unquote enemies when we're all technically one, but also that you wouldn't just take out your enemy. You would actually just ruin everything.
Yeah, you're harming yourself just as much as your enemy. And every nuclear bomb that's exploded since this, that we've tested over the last 40, 50 years, all this nuclear dust has gone up into our atmosphere. I mean, it won't always be that way. Eventually, nuclear energy fusion that we use now will be phased out. And an interim step will be nuclear fission, which is where they can generate electricity and power from an isotope of water. And, of course, water is abundant on our planet. But right now, the selfish interest of the powers that be want to keep what's there because they make money off of it. But nuclear fusion is out there, and eventually humanity will be given this new technology of light, which is the space brothers and sisters are preparing for now, which will generate all of our power needs directly from the sun. So the future is there, but they couldn't give us that right now because we have, for one, we haven't sworn off war as a means of settling our differences, and we would just take whatever scientific advances they have, and it would be bent to our own misuse, you know, in war or some other way.
Sure, it would be turned right into a weapon. You know what? We actually have a caller. Would you mind talking to or listening to Troy in Lincoln? He has a question for you.
Okay.
All right. Troy, are you there?
Yeah.
Hi, Troy. Thank you so much for calling in to the Dirt.
No problem.
So do you have a question or a comment for McNair?
Yeah, I just was wondering what he thought about abductions, alien abductions.
Oh, good question. McNair?
Yeah. Our information, I know there's a lot of differences, different opinions about this, is that the people that are visiting Earth are totally benevolent and here to help humanity. There are, you know, of course there's a government cover-up, and there has been for many years, not only in America but other countries of the world. And there are actually specific offices that are charged with the task of going out and putting out misinformation about the UFOs. And part of that, we believe, is the idea behind abductions and that the aliens are here to harm us. So that's basically it in a nutshell. And I know there's been books written by people, and I don't know really how to critique, nor do I want to, what they say, but our information is that the space people are benevolent and here to help humanity.
Does that answer your question, Troy? I think I might have lost Troy. Are you still there, McNair?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that answer, and thank you, Troy, for calling in. If you have any other questions, Troy, feel free to call back. Now, you recently gave a talk. It was called UFOs and Their Spiritual Mission. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that talk, where it took place, and let us know what you mean by spiritual mission?
Well, it was at a, I forget the name of the expo. You were there, too.
Oh, the Healing Arts.
Okay. Healing Arts, that's right.
Oh, you know what? We're actually going to be going to a break in two minutes, so why don't we kind of skip going over that and just basically let me know, how was it that you decided to start speaking at these festivals and different things? Is it just to help others find what you know, or?
Well, part of our task, those who volunteer in this work, have taken it upon ourselves to make this information known, not in terms of proselytizing or to get converts, that sort of thing, but just to put the information out there, because we feel like events will unfold in such a way that people will be able to make up their minds about it. And we're kind of helping to prepare the way for the emergence of the World Teacher, as well as to give people this information about the transformation that our planet is going through right now.
So will we be able to expect maybe a book from you? Or have you written any books?
Who knows what the future holds.
Okay, that's good. Well, and just one more question.
But I don't have anything in the works right now. There's certainly a lot of books out there written by Benjamin Krim on this subject.
Well, now,
and Alice Bailey. Yeah.
As far as like the area that you do these events, and this is just real quick because we only have a few seconds, do you mostly work in Northern California? Is that your area?
Yeah, the volunteers, we live in the Bay Area, and then we do outreach, and you know, like to Sacramento and different areas around here. Yeah.
All
in
right.
fact, last weekend we just did the Whole Life Expo in San Francisco, and today we had a booth up at the Cinco de Mayo Fair in San Francisco.
Oh, that sounds great. Okay, so when we come back, we're going to talk about UFOs and their spiritual mission with you. So everybody stay tuned for the Dirt, and we'll be right back with McNair Azard.
Dirt. Here's Lori Schultz.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to The Dirt, and our special guest tonight is McNair Azard, and he is about to tell us about a speech or a talk that he gave on UFOs and their spiritual mission, and we would like to know what he means by spiritual mission. So, McNair, are you there with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
As I said earlier, the space people have been visiting our planet for thousands of years, but especially more since the 1940s and 50s with the advent of nuclear energy and the nuclear bomb. And it's spiritual in the sense that they have a concern that we should not destroy ourselves and that we should change our way of life and our way of organizing our world so that we don't destroy the world from an ecological point of view and not destroy each other in a war, like using nuclear weapons. As our planets are all interrelated, they advance together, and when one of their own, like in planet Earth, starts to go off the path, they want to do what they can to help us in a spiritual sense. So there are four primary things that they are doing by being here. One is that they are preparing a platform for Maitreya, who is the world teacher who is also in the world, and having to do with the technology of light that will be given to humanity once there are no more wars and the principle of sharing is governing our economic affairs. The technology of light will give us all the energy, basically, that we need directly from the sun, and it's a totally non-polluting kind of energy. And the second thing they're doing is their creation, and this has to do, in a way, with the technology of light, they're creating a magnetic field on the physical plane, and we can talk a little bit about the crop circles because they have something to do with that. Okay. And this creation of the magnetic field on the physical plane has to do with the coming technology. The third thing is our planet has exerted on it from a great body in space a force which pulls it very slightly off its axis, and the space people have put around our planet a band of light that keeps it from being shifted off its axis. Now, if that band of light, and they keep that light around the planet, if it wasn't there, we would be experiencing cataclysm after cataclysm, and life indeed would be very painful for all of us on planet Earth. And the fourth thing they're doing is, within karmic law, they are neutralizing as much of the nuclear pollution and radiation in our atmosphere and in our oceans as much as they can. They're helping. They're actually doing a great work of salvaging the planet and helping to restore the equilibrium on our planet.
All right. And so what about the crop circles?
Well, the crop circles are really, there's several ideas about them, one of which is that they are kind of a tangential way of indicating that we are not alone on our planet. The way that, and most of them actually have been appearing for a number of years in southern England, in the crop fields around London and southern England, and there's a reason for that is because when the world teacher came into the world, his point of focus has been London, England. That's where he's been, and it's there to to allude to that fact, as well as to allude to the fact that we're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
But the crop circles are created by a combination of thought and machine. So the space people in their spacecraft have in mind what they want the design of the crop circle, and they bring it down to close to the Earth. And in a matter of moments, their machine and their UFOs responds to their thought, and they create these fantastic designs. Now, our planet is surrounded in a great magnetic field. It's similar to the human body has, the chakras going up and down the spine in the energetic body that we all have. Our planet has one as well, and the energy of this magnetic field travels in lines around the planet, and where it crisscrosses, it creates these vortexes of energy similar to the chakras in the spine, and these crop circles are replicas on the dense physical plane of these vortexes of energy on the magnetic field. And they create these in the mountains and in the oceans. When they're in a crop field, we see the crop circle, but when they're in the mountains or in the ocean, we don't see them. But they will serve kind of like storage tanks of energy for the coming time. And with this technology of light, the energy from the sun will be used together through the magnetic field of our Earth's
planet Earth's magnetic field and give us all of our energy, serve all of our energy needs. So it has to do with the coming technology and energy which will be given to humanity in the future.
Okay, and we're actually going to be going to a break that's going to be a little longer, so we're going to be at the top of the hour. So if you'd like to, you know, take a little break yourself, we'll be back in about 6 minutes, I believe.
Okay.
And so when we come back, I would like to talk a little bit about what our purpose is of life here on Earth. And, you know, and also I was wondering if you had any opinion on the pyramids and things like that. If they have anything to do with, like, crop circles. So we'll go through that, and so everybody stay tuned for The Dirt. We're at the top of the hour, and we'll be back with McNair Azard.
Warning. What you're about to hear is true and may be disturbing for some audiences.
Actually, it started with my kids. The kids were waking up in the middle of the night saying that they felt that somebody was over them. They were hearing singing.
You're about to explore another world, another universe, with the likes of ghosts, Bigfoot, and UFOs.
They were standing up there doing an investigation, and they saw a phantom fire up here growing green and yellow.
You're tuned to The Dirt.
When they walked towards it, it went out, and it just disappeared. And they heard what sounded like an Indian saying, Eotosh, Eotosh, which in Algonquin language means stand and fight.
You're tuned to The Dirt.
So we pulled down this road, and we got down into a little bit of a clearing. And about that time, we heard this loud scream, howl, pipes down. The thing was sitting there. It was huge. You could see it kind of, it almost like it was dancing back and forth and had its arms waving. My stepmother looked at me and said, that's Bigfoot.
And now, here comes your diva of the dark, Lori Schultz.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to The Dirt, and we are on the second hour, and I am pleased to reintroduce McNair Azard. McNair, are you there with us?
Hi,
Lori. Hi. Okay, before we actually went to our long break, which I hope you got a chance to get a drink or something, we were talking about UFOs and crop circles. And I was just wondering if you thought that perhaps any of the messages from, you know, space beings or space people would be like through the pyramids, Stonehenge, Easter Island. Any of those things have anything to do with, like, crop circles as well, like a similar type message, or do you think they're unrelated?
Well, I don't know either way. I mean, I know about them, and I've read in the past about the pyramids. I think Edgar Cayce used to write about them as well, but unfortunately, I don't know a lot about them, so I can't say they do, and I can't say they don't.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just thought I would ask, and I also wanted to know what your thoughts were. Okay, so since we've talked about the space beings and, you know, the abductions and different things like that, I also wanted to know what you thought about, like, with ghosts. I mean, do you think, like, spirits or ghosts or people coming back, I mean, where's your belief system with that, or how does it relate to your spirituality as you see it now?
Well, I think ghosts are real. You know, when we leave this physical body, we go through a process of, it's like taking off a rain jacket, you know. We take off the jacket, we take off this physical form, and we go, according to Ageless Wisdom teachings, we go for a while into our astral body, and then eventually we drop that and we go to the mental body and so on. And I think my understanding, and I haven't spent a lot of time studying it, but my understanding is that the ghosts are really beings who are still, I think, in their astral body, and they are oftentimes stuck, like, at a particular point or a particular lifetime on Earth that they haven't been able to release or let go from. But I do think they're real, definitely.
Okay. And the one other thing I wanted to ask you about that was, now I'm backstepping again, but I just wanted to ask you, why do you think the government covers up, like, the crop circles and different things like that? I mean, because they always have, they say it's a hoax, or they don't make a real big deal out of it. And so I'm always wondering why they do that.
It's an interesting topic. I mean, you know, there's the Disclosure Project that's going on now. I can't think of the doctor's name, but he's actually coming out with it's already out, and I think they're working on distribution. It's called Sirius Films, S-I-R-I-U-S, I believe. And he talks in there about the UFOs and the cover-up and stuff. But my understanding is that, you know, these people from other planets are so evolved, more than those of our governments on this planet, that if we knew the approach that the people on other planets have to living together and working together in cooperation, and so advanced spiritually and technologically, we wouldn't want our governments anymore. And there's nothing more frightening to a government than to lose its power over its people. So they don't, and another thing is they don't really know how to respond to the UFOs. I mean, on one hand, they say the UFOs don't exist, but as in England, they say the UFOs don't exist, but they also put out press releases that say they bear no threat to our skies or something. You know?
I saw that.
They speak out of both sides of their mouth. But basically, it's because we wouldn't want our governments anymore once these space people were to land and we met them and we knew what they were all about, then that's frightening to our governments.
Well, and also we have Area 51, and now so the government will deny it and they worry about us possibly ditching them, you know, knowing that, hey, we don't even need this. We're something more than we are just physically here. Mm-hmm. But they also get a lot of their technology, supposedly, through space people.
Yeah, I think that has happened. And supposedly there are bases even in Russia, and the Russians, some Russian scientists have been working with the people from the other planets for a while now. On exactly what, I don't know, but yes, I think they do come to our planet to help humanity. In fact, one of a most significant figure in the U.S. was back in the 50s. A man named George Adamski had a visit his first visit was in Desert Center, California, and he went out to the desert with some friends, and a spacecraft landed, and he talked to him, and subsequent to that, he was actually taken up in a spacecraft to a larger mothership where he met with a great, highly evolved being. To us, it would be a god from Venus, and he received a number of teachings from that teacher, which he shared in his book. The first book he co-wrote with an Englishman named Desmond Leslie called Flying Saucers Have Landed, and Desmond Leslie talked historically about how spaceships have been visiting Earth, but the second part of the book was also Adamski's experience with that in 1952. But subsequent to that, he wrote a book called Flying Saucers Have Landed, which is where he told about going up in the spaceships. And so it turns out that Adamski, you know, according to Benjamin Krim, was right on in much of this experience that he shared through his books, that in fact, Adamski himself was someone from another planet who had taken on a human body for a specific purpose, and then when he died, he went back to his, you know, to his other activities in the spacecraft.
So do you think that's why they came back and visited him then? It was just to remind him of who he was?
Could have been, or to make it more plausible that they could get their teachings out through someone that, you know, who was human like us.
Okay. And let's see. As far as the government cover-ups and things like that, too, do you think that, like, some of the bases even in California could know things? Or do you think it's just a few who know these things? Do you think, like, military bases know of these things? Or do you think it's just the government? If they're covering up, they know.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of books out there on... Stephen Greer is the guy that's the head of the Disclosure Project, and he has a lot of information on this. But there are bases, UFO bases, all around the world. In fact, some of them are under the ocean. And what relationship they have to do with our military installations, I don't know. But where there's smoke, there's fire, and I would certainly think Area 51 would be an indication of something. I mean, you know, the Roswell incident, I know everybody that's interested in UFO has heard about that. That was actually a true happening. these space beings on this spaceship sacrificed themselves through that crash so that they could show that there were visitors from other planets. Now, because they lowered the vibration of their physical, their bodies, and became dense physical matter and their spacecraft as well, it wasn't long before it started to dissipate and go back to the etheric. But they had a great act of sacrifice for our benefit by making that event happen.
You know, when you're talking about the under the ocean bases, under the water bases and stuff, I actually have a friend. Okay, this is like one of those he said, she said things. But a friend that I totally trust, I actually work with him. His parents lived down in the Bahamas, and they were sitting out on their porch, and they're overlooking the ocean and everything, and right in front of them, and they got it on video, and he's trying to get the video, but they're really bad at sending it. They're not technically advanced or whatever, and that I'm trying to get it. It would be great. But anyway, he got it on film, a craft above the water, and all of a sudden he got it going straight down into the ocean, and they thought it was just gone, and all of a sudden it pops up and takes off like 5 minutes later.
Yeah. You know, I've got it in my PowerPoint presentation, I show a slide of in the jungles of India. It was discovered within the past few years in the caves there, these cave drawings that show an outline of a UFO, a spacecraft, as well as somebody we might think would be coming in a space outfit with a helmet and that sort of thing. And according to this local archaeologist, these drawings were totally out of character with the other prehistoric cave drawings that were in those same caves. And they're estimating that this cave drawing is probably 40,000 years old.
Wow.
And in fact, Desmond Leslie, when he wrote his book, Flying Saucers Have Landed, he says that there is evidence of, you know, that we've been visited by UFOs for quite a long time. And certainly, you know, it's been great having YouTube out there where people have been able to film a lot of these UFOs happening.
Well, a lot of the Egyptian, pictures and stuff that they show, like, a lot of light, like, beams going up and, like, you know, what would look like celestial beams. And they drew them on their walls and different things like that, too. I mean, so
it makes you wonder why our civilization is so afraid of it.
Yeah,
you know,
so in denial.
Why we think we are the center of the universe. I mean, there's a great plan that's unfolding with all of creation, and we're part of that. But humanity is not the end point of evolution. You know, it's a process we go through.
Do you think it's possibly the ego of our individual, you know, being?
Well, we're conditioned from the time we're born, you know, to think that this physical body is all that we are. You know, but we're much more than that. But we're conditioned by our parents first and our siblings and then by our school system and our religions and our political and economic systems to think that this is who we are, this three-dimensional plane, and that we're here to, you know, have a house, have a car, all these things that are total illusions. And so we get caught up in this and we think that there is nothing more to life than this. But we're wrong. There is so much more to life.
Right. And
including life on other planets.
Exactly, which they want to say. I mean, look at all the stars out there. Imagine we have one sun and look at all the planets around it and all the life that exists around one. Imagine all the life that's out there when you just look up into the sky and you see all the stars.
Well, eventually, once Maitreya is on the public stage and he is asked, he says who he is and why he's here, and he introduces some of the masters, he will be asked about life on other planets and people from the spaceships. And he will tell the truth about who they are and why they're here. Eventually, you know, some of these spacecraft will land and people will meet these people and they'll know who they are and where they're from. They won't be working, and our information is that they won't be working openly as much in the world with humanity on a day-to-day basis as the masters will. But the masters and Maitreya, they will talk about life on other planets and that it's true that they are here and they've been visiting us and they're here to help.
Well, do you think that the Bible actually has basically kind of told us or hinted at all of these realities, and a lot of people maybe have taken the Bible and just kind of confined it to a religion, like rules made by us, when in reality maybe a lot of these things are actually talked about in the Bible. I mean, when they talk about celestial beings and different things like that, that's not to say that they're not what we call now aliens.
Right, exactly. I mean, the Bible, people have taken the Bible and interpreted it literally, word for word, when it's really a deep esoteric work and not meant to be taken literally but symbolically. That's why, and of course it's been interpreted and reinterpreted over the centuries many times, so the original teaching is often lost in that reinterpretation. But yes, I agree with you. I think there are references to celestial beings who are aliens. According to our information, you know, the Star of Bethlehem, which led the wise men to Bethlehem to see the newborn child of Jesus, was a UFO leading the way for them to go. And in fact, in 2008, December of 2008, Share International, which foundation, put out a large, a widespread news release, which said that very soon a bright star-like object would soon be seen in the sky, heralding the imminent appearance of Maitreya into the world on his first television interviews. And within a very short time, we started getting these photographs and from people who had taken pictures of these luminous objects in the sky that would change colors, would spin, would be different colors, would appear and disappear. And these are actually four gigantic spacecraft that are placed around the planet, heralding the time when Maitreya will come out onto the public stage and there to be in our skies until the Day of Declaration. These are similar to what happened over Bethlehem, but these spacecraft are in addition to the other UFOs that our people are seeing, because they've only been in our skies since 2009, 2010. They are the size of five football fields. So these UFOs are massive,
and
they have this ability to appear and disappear, but they're in the Earth's atmosphere, heralding this time when the world teacher will come out onto the public stage. So, yeah, I think the Bible does have references to that.
And how do you feel about the idea or the concept of space people living among us?
I think they do. I think they have the ability to just blend in, and you would know them as to the extent that they wanted you to know who they were. But yeah, I think they do.
Do you think that some of with the coming basically of the teacher, do you believe that some of us will awaken and know or realize past or future lives or different things like that? Or do you think that's something that is only revealed once we move on from this place?
No, I think eventually humanity will evolve to the point that they will be able to recall former lives. You know, in a way, we are blessed that we don't have the knowledge of them. I mean, when we come into incarnation, some children have memories of their previous lives. In fact, I think the title of a book I once read was called Old Souls, and it was an investigation by someone that worked with Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia. And he went to different parts of the world and interviewed the families and these children who had these memories that normally they wouldn't have, but when he investigated these memories of their former lives, he found out that these kids were remembering how they died, family members who were still alive from their previous life, and so on. So, but as they age, some of these children would forget about these experiences. But I think eventually, when we evolve a bit, we will be able to recall past lives.
That book?
I think it was called Old Souls.
Old Souls. Boy, yeah. That sounds like an interesting book.
Yeah, it was very good. You know, there's one, according to the Ageless Wisdom teachings, if we actually remember, had the recall of our past lives, it brings in the karma that has to be resolved with it. So we're actually spared having to work on karma that we don't already have to work on in this life. But I think kind of a shield goes over our consciousness when we come back into incarnation, and where we don't remember I mean, every experience we've ever had throughout the incarnational process stays with us on the soul level, and that we come back in to work off certain karma from certain lifetimes with certain people.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people miss the idea of life itself and spirituality. I think it's just all about love and the realization that we're all really one. We're all, I mean, we're not even a separate body. If you look at it and you look at our molecules and everything else, we're all a vibrational frequency, really.
Exactly. But we, like I talked about conditioning, we're conditioned to think that we're not this. One of the wonderful teachings which the world teacher Maitreya has given out so far is that not only is he here to help us change our economic system so that we don't have the suffering that exists in the world, but he will be teaching us the art of self-realization. And he says that the reason we suffer is because we cling to, we identify with the things which aren't real, which are transient. He says he comes to teach the art of self-realization. He says, self alone matters. You are that self, an immortal being. And suffering is caused by identification with anything and everything which is not the self. So we have to gradually detach and re-identify not with the physical form, but with the true spiritual essence that we are. And that's the purpose, of course, of the reincarnational process. We gradually do that over time.
What are your thoughts on, like, astral projection?
I think that's possible, yeah. I just finished reading a wonderful book. I've read it several times, in fact. It's no longer in print. You can get it online, though, and download it. It's in two volumes. The first volume is called Beyond the Himalayas, and the second volume is The Yoga of the Christ, and it's about this gentleman's travels in Tibet. McDonnell Bain is his last name, McDonnell-Bain, B-A-Y-N-E. Mm-hmm. And he travels and he meets all these great, highly evolved spiritual teachers in Tibet back in, I think it was probably back in the 40s and 50s. And he tells of these experiences of these people being able to appear to him. And in fact, he learned how to project himself to back to London or Scotland where he was from and be in a room where his friends were. And later he could tell them what they had talked about on a certain day when he came back from Tibet and stuff. So I think these are, all these experiences are possible. Whether or not, you know, a person wants to engage with it unless they have the spiritual advance to deal with what comes out of that, you know, it's another matter.
That's,
you know,
very true. Because they say, like, one risk that a person has if they were to astral project is possibly, you know, leaving their body, you know, vulnerable to other spirits, because I guess the experience of life, or, you know, in a physical sense, is, like, desirable to some spirits maybe that are around that, I don't know,
yeah,
that don't move on.
I've heard that. I think, and who knows, you might get lost, too, and can't find your way back.
That's true. You know, one interesting thing I heard once was a girl who went into a coma. And she was in a coma for like a couple years or something like that. It was like a long time. But then all of a sudden she woke up and she spoke a different language.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was really odd.
What did they think that was due to?
They didn't know. I guess the parents learned the other language. For real, that's what I heard, that
wow.
They just learned it. But I would be, it would bother me a lot. What do you think about Bigfoot? Do you think, a lot of people think he's related to space people?
I find the stories interesting, just like Loch Ness Monster, you know, I have an interest in that, but I certainly don't know what to make of it.
Yeah.
Like Sasquatch and is Sasquatch the same as Bigfoot?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people think that there's something to do with that. I know there's, like, an author, David Pilates, and he writes The Missing 411, and there's something to do with portals and Bigfoot and some connection with that. So it's kind of interesting. I'm reading a book right now about that, and there's some sort of alien connection with it. I'll read it. I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, with all this talk, the one thing that might be crossing our listeners' minds are, so how do you feel about heaven and hell then? I mean, if there's just like this, you know, reincarnation, and really if if a person's going through a rebirth all the time, that kind of separates people's religious ideas of what heaven and hell is.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I grew up with the tradition that, you know, if you lived a good life, you'd go to heaven when you died, and you'd be playing around with the angels and play a harp and all that sort of thing. But to me, that's not real. That's not what happens. I mean, you can see people living on our streets under bridges now that have a living hell right now. Let me have some water, excuse me.
Yeah.
So I think hell can take... Hell, to me, is a state of consciousness.
Okay.
But certainly, I think there are different levels that we go to when we die before we come back into incarnation. And depending on our level of consciousness at the time we die and what kind of life we've led, we might go to a different level. Certainly, the more spiritually advanced of humanity will go to the higher planes before and spend time before they come back into incarnation. But... there is no sense of a physical place where you go and you burn for all eternity. I mean, the plan is much grander than that. The plan is that eventually we would all become these great masters, spiritually advanced beings. And the way that we do that is coming back into incarnation and learning and growing and expressing the divinity that is within all of us. So heaven... there's different ways to interpret heaven, but heaven is also another name for this highly evolved group of masters called the Masters of Wisdom, which is where we go to once we become a Master of Wisdom as well.
Okay. So if you were going to, you know, send anybody to get the information that you've obtained, and that's obviously changed your life and the way you think and your level of maybe... spirituality, where would you send a person first? How would you guide them?
Well, we have a great website called shareinternational.org, and they could just type it in the Google or any search engine, and it would bring up our webpage. And there's links on that to Krim's books as well as our magazine called Share International, which is a monthly publication that we take no advertising in it, but it covers from a spiritual perspective as well as positive things that are going on economically and environmentally, politically in the world. And it also has a monthly message from Krim's Master in it. But it's a great magazine. And then also people in the Sacramento area might be interested. On the 19th, a couple of our co-workers are giving a talk at the New Earth Expo at 2 p.m. about the UFOs and spiritual mission and so on. And I think it's at the Crown Plaza on Date Avenue.
Okay. I'm writing that down. I'll post it.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can check on that information.
The 19th on a Sunday. The talk is at 2 p.m. at the New Earth Expo.
Okay. And so when I saw you at the Healing Arts Festival, is that kind of like a similar thing that these people would be experiencing, or is this something separate?
Yeah. Every person that volunteers for this work has their own way of presenting information, and you know they can focus on different parts. This information, the story, has many facets to it, but I think their talk is going to be about what's happening with the UFOs and the emergence of Maitreya. We don't have a lot of time to develop the story. You know, it's only like 45 minutes or so, and they're also going to talk about, I believe, about this kind of service meditation that many of us do called transmission meditation. At that talk, they're going to talk about it.
Oh, okay. So what is that?
Transmission meditation, as Krim has gone around the world talking about the World Teacher and more recently about the UFOs as well, his master has given to the world this form of group meditation called transmission meditation. And it's based on the idea that throughout history, this highly evolved group of individuals, the masters, have always sent their energy and love out to humanity. And they've always used like services or meditation groups to kind of send this energy through. But it's based on the idea, if you will, that before electricity comes into your house and it goes through a transformer, and the transformer steps it down so that when you plug in your coffee pot or your blender or whatever, you can use the electricity because it's been stepped down. Well, the masters use these groups, come together specifically to meditate, and the masters use these groups. They send it through the groups when they come together, and then the masters send it out into the world where it's needed to kind of prop up the spiritual reservoir of energy that's needed by people that are groups and people that are working for the welfare of humanity. We don't send it any particular place because we could be doing exactly opposite of what's needed in a particular, say, if we send it to a hot spot in the world where war was going, it might be exactly what's opposite of what's needed. Maybe the energy needs to be withdrawn by the masters from that. But so the groups come together specifically to meditate. It's a silent meditation. We say what's called the great invocation, which invokes the energy. And then we just sit in silent meditation, and the masters, we're told, use those groups, and there's groups now all over the world, to send that energy, step it down for the benefit of humanity. But one great thing about it is that it doesn't interfere with anybody's own personal meditation that they might do or whatever service work they might be involved in, or if they have a religion, it doesn't interfere with that. In fact, it can only enhance one's personal spiritual service activity. But in a year of regular, consistent transmission meditation, one can achieve as much spiritual growth as you would, say, in 10 to 15 years of meditation on your own, just because in group formation, more energy can go through the chakras of the individuals and create kind of a what's called a spiritual tension, which is necessary for growth and evolution. So it's a fantastic means of personal growth, although the primary purpose of it is to serve humanity.
Wow, that is really interesting. And so if somebody goes to this on the 19th, they would be able to get information on this?
Get information, or they could, if they have access to the Internet, they can just type in transmission meditation, and I'm sure a website will come up about it.
Wow, that's amazing. And what would you say, out of everything that you use in your life, what is your best resource for, I guess your spirituality right now?
Besides meditation?
Yeah.
Well, certainly meditation and doing the transmission meditation, because I meditate twice a day and I do the transmission 2 to 3 nights a week. But I would say certainly the teachings, the books written by Benjamin Krim as well as Alice Bailey. You know, humanity has always had access to these teachings from these great teachers, but the Alice Bailey teachings, Krishnamurti teachings have done a lot for me, as well as, until a couple of years ago, there was a great spiritual teacher living in India called Satya Sai Baba, and I've enjoyed reading his teachings over the years as well.
Okay, and I was just wondering, too, one thing I never did get to ask you, it was actually on the questions I really wanted to hear. What is the Antichrist?
The Antichrist is, first of all, let me say that it's not a person. The Antichrist is an energy which comes before the Christ and paves the way for the building forces of the Christ. Now, when traditional Christians hear this message about the world teacher, they automatically think that we are talking about the Antichrist, and so they immediately reject it. But we're not. The Antichrist actually has already come and done its work on the planet, and it was an energy that was embodied in individuals like Hitler in Germany, Mussolini in Italy, and to a lesser extent, the militarist in Japan during the World War. And they helped embody that humanity's evil and the Antichrist energy, and to prepare the way, destroy the old ways, the old structures, and to prepare the way for the building forces of the Christ. So it's already come and done its work. So it's an energy and not necessarily a particular person.
Okay. Well, so we're coming at the end of our interview, and I just first of all want to say thank you so much for being here with us, McNair. I mean, the information that you've shared with us, your experiences, you're an amazing person, and I wish you nothing but love and peace, and I hope you, you know, keep learning and keep teaching, because everything you've shared with me and our listeners today, it's just been wonderful. So I also wanted to make sure that if there's anything that you would like to promote or anything that you would like to, you know, suggest for the listeners for, you know, any reason at all, just feel free to do that. I want to give you this opportunity to say whatever you'd like to say.
Okay, thank you. Well, this is a great time to have hope for humanity, but we've got a lot of work ahead of us. We created this mess, but the time is coming when we'll have a decision to make. Want to continue in the old separatist, greedy, materialistic ways of the past, or do we want to embrace the new ways of sharing and cooperation and taking care of each other? The choice will be ours, but with the masters in the world and the world teacher, and of course the help from the space people and the UFOs, we feel like humanity will make the right choice for an optimistic future, but it's up to us. Nothing will ever be imposed on us. But this is a great time of change, but the future bodes well for humanity if we learn to live together in peace and cooperation and learn to share the resources of the world. So I would say have hope, but the task is ahead of us to change and create a brilliant civilization for humanity. But we will do it. We won't be allowed to destroy the planet.
I think that's beautiful. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, McNair Azard, for being here with us today. And I will, of course, be following, you know, you and hopefully, you know, learning some more. And, boy, you would be welcome back here anytime. If there's ever anything you'd like to share or promote, please let me know. I'd be happy to do it for you.
And thanks, Lori. I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, thank you, too. And I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
You, too.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, everybody. That was McNair Azard. And I just want to, again, say thank you, McNair, for being on the show with us today. We're actually going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to have Bonnie Sorber on with us. So stay tuned for The Dirt. We're going to get our vegan recipe.
And now, here comes your diva of the dark. Here's Lori and The Dirt.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to The Dirt, and we had a wonderful show. McNair Azard was a great guest. We had a lot of information on UFO, spirituality, and just endless amounts of information. If you'd like to check him out or any of his information after listening to this program, you can check it out on the Dirt page. So come on, Dirt Heads, check it out and see what you think. And also, we've got Bonnie Sorber on the line with us, our vegan recipe specialist. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi.
Thank you so much for calling in.
You're welcome.
So we're going to see if we can freak out Chris Singleton, not Silverton, like I was calling him last week. What the heck was that?
You know, it's fine.
Yeah,
call me anything you want, Lori.
Silver and gold. Maybe I was just thinking silver and gold because he's so good and shiny at his job back here.
Aw, thank you.
You're welcome. So, Bonnie, what do you have for us this week?
I don't think I'll be too grossed out. It's a beverage.
Ooh,
so
good.
It's an alcoholic beverage. It's called ginger sake. I just made it up a little bit ago.
You're like, so innovative. I love it.
Thanks. So I'll play the recipe, and then you can tell me if you think that you might like it.
Okay.
I created it, actually, too, because I have allergies, and this is a good one for allergies,
really?
I think.
Why is that?
Okay, so it's ginger sake, and
it's
a half a cup.
Oh, no, I was like, why is that? Why is it good for your allergies?
Oh, because it has ginger in it.
Oh, and ginger, like, relieves, like, stuffiness or something?
Yeah.
I knew that.
I love ginger.
See, this is why I have my sister on here, you guys, because this is why I'm needling her. Like, if she was just an average guest, I wouldn't go, why?
Oh, that's so funny. It's a half a cup premium ginger ale. And by premium, I mean like a good kind. Like, for instance, I bought some, I can't remember the name of it, but I bought it at Beverages and More. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on the radio, but I bought it from there, and it was a really good quality kind, and I recommend something good. Something that you like the flavor of, because that's the base of the drink, you know?
Okay.
And then 2 ounces of chilled premium sake. And you want to make sure your sake tastes good, too. Otherwise, you're not going to want to drink it, right?
Exactly. There's good and bad.
Exactly. And 2 teaspoons of finely grated fresh ginger. Mm. Or you can use a half a teaspoon of ground ginger. But if you really want the ginger to work for you, I would say fresh ginger. And it is really spicy, but it's good. I like it a lot. So if you like ginger, try it.
Okay.
And then crystallized ginger for garnish. And then you just stir all the above, except for the garnish part. And it serves too. And it's spicy and slightly sweet.
So do you think it's more of a dessert type of a drink, or do you think it's during your meal, sake? So would it be like with sushi or after?
You could drink it with sushi, actually. That's a great idea, because then instead of eating that, you know, that pink pickle stuff or whatever, you could have a sip of your beverage.
Yeah, that's a good idea. See, we're building on this.
Yeah, that is a great idea, Lori. You're killing two birds with one stone. You're relieving your thirst, and you're also clearing your palate for the next sushi piece.
Wow, and see, that does sound really good. So, and I love sushi. You love sushi, you know, but I'm never really big on eating that ginger in between. It's, like, too much for me. So
yeah, I never
something like
either. And I'm a ginger person. I like the flavor of ginger, but I never did that, eating that pickled stuff.
So did you have your hubby try this drink?
Yes, I did.
And?
And he said, it's okay. I like last week's drink better.
Oh, yeah. Last week sounded really good. I didn't get a chance to try it yet. But you did post it, and I know you're going to go ahead and post this one as well. And,
yes.
And going with sushi, I think that's a great idea. So if anybody tries this drink, they need to, like, get some sushi, too. I think they do.
Yeah, I think it's good. Regular, though, I just had some. I drank it.
Do you think it's one of those
like,
drinks
where
like you can
just call to
drink
make
it
sure
and drink it?
Good. What?
Do you think it's one of those drinks where you can drink it and drink it? Or do you think it's just kind
no.
of like, you know,
yeah,
you
I
have
would
one?
Just, I would just have one, probably. But you know, I guess it just kind of depends on if you like ginger or not. And I like ginger, and I'm not a huge fan of, like, I like ginger ale, but it has to be good ginger ale. Like, not too sweet, and you actually have to taste the flavor, you know, of it.
Yeah.
So it's probably not one that you'd be like, let's make a big old batch of this. But
yeah,
definitely with your sushi, I think that's a phenomenal idea on your part. So.
Yeah, that's true. So what else are you doing tonight, Bonnie?
You know what? I went to the Sky Academy's Cinderella play today, and I have to say it was phenomenal. I went, and we paid $7.50 for a ticket, and I went for myself and ended up seeing Jessica and the boys, which
aww.
Was fun. And I encouraged my kids to go, and they were going to go, and then last minute they decided they didn't want to, so I said, that's fine.
Aww.
But it was a great show. It was like a full-on production, full-on play, and it was awesome.
Well, was it only tonight, or can other people watch this?
It was last night and tonight, so
aww.
It's already over, sadly. Well, but I wish I would have went last night so I could have told people about it.
Yeah.
I did tell other people about it, but I had never gone to one of their productions before, so I didn't really know what to expect. But I was so pleasantly surprised and amazed at the talent and everything. It was phenomenal.
That's really cool. You know, I always think it's a lot of fun to go to plays. I mean, it's just a form of entertainment that, I mean, it used to be, like, the thing to do. Like, you didn't go to the movie theater before. It was go to a play, you know?
Yeah.
And then as soon as movies started, you know, being more popular and obviously, you know, so many effects and everything else, you kind of, a lot of people backed away from the plays. But every single time I go, I get this experience that you just cannot get going to a theater or something like that, or watching a movie. You can't. A play is just, it's awesome.
It is. And the kids, these are all high school kids. And there was a little girl that was in my computer class this year. She's in fifth grade, and she was in it as well. And there's three littler kids, and the rest were high school students from the Ryzen Charter Schools Sky program, I believe it was. So they worked really hard, you can tell. They worked on it for, I guess, 12 to 15 weeks. And
wow.
It's just amazing the amount of talent that the girls sang so beautifully. And it was just incredibly awesome.
Oh, I'm glad you had such a great night. And I'm super glad that you called in and shared your vegan recipe with us. You know, I always love that. So do you have any tips, I mean, any clues to what next week is? Oh, actually, next week, you're off the hook. Guess what? It's a rerun week because it's Mother's Day weekend. So I'm actually playing a rerun next weekend.
Okay, well, then I will think of something extra, extra good since I'll have 2 weeks to think about it.
Oh, cool. All right, awesome. Well, I hope everybody does have a great Mother's Day weekend next weekend.
Okay.
And stay tuned in 2 weeks for a brand new dirt. So we'll be looking forward to that and your recipe. So thank you very much, Bonnie, for calling in tonight.
Sure. Thank you for having me on, and I hope you have a great night also. And I can't wait to see you again very soon, and I love you very much.
Thank you. I love you, too.
Okay. Bye. Bye.
So, Chris.
What's up?
So, do you get into sake or anything like that?
I have tried the sake. It's not a favorite of mine.
It's pretty
harsh.
It is.
And you got to drink it warm.
No, not all sake. Like this one, you wouldn't.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's a difference.
That might be doable, because it's the warm that really gets me.
I know. I can't do the warm sake either. And some of those warm sake drinkers out there, they might be going, oh, you're kidding. You never tried this or tried that. But you know what? It's the cold sake that's actually good. There is.
You know, I've never had a cold.
Did you ever go to Blue Nami?
No, I've never been to Blue Nami. Ooh. Is that a place? Or?
Yeah, it's a sushi place. And they have this green apple sake. It literally tastes like one of those green apple Jolly Ranchers.
Okay, now I do like green apple schnapps.
Oh, see, you would love this one.
Okay.
You would absolutely love it. And I've only seen it for
I kind of feel like a woman, you know, saying that on the radio. But I do enjoy some green apple schnapps.
That's so funny. I mean, you can't help it. Once in a while, you have to have something that's flowery for the taste buds, you know. So tell me, now, how much time do we have? Because I want to ask you a question about some investigations.
We got a couple minutes left. We need to take one more break. But
all right. Okay, well, have you been on any cool investigations lately?
Oh, geez. Probably the coolest one that I've been on recently was there was a demonic haunting down in Oakland. And there wasn't much evidence, but you could just watching the owner of the house actually talk about what was happening to her. Just seeing her explain what was going on and seeing the emotions on her face was probably really trying. You don't see too many people actually in pain when you go to their
really?
To their house. Then we couldn't find anything, which was which was even kind of stranger. You know, just little things. But anytime it was only when she was in the room with us.
Hmm.
You know.
So do you think that when it's something like that, do you think for sure it has to do with spirits?
You know, I don't ever know for sure. I don't ever like to say I know for sure.
Yeah.
I think I know some things. I think that with that one, it was clearly something attached to the homeowner.
Oh,
it wasn't
wow.
something on the house.
You know, that's kind of scary. What would you do if you were that person? I'd be like running into the nearest Catholic church. Please dip me in some holy water.
I mean, I'm so curious that I'm halfway of the mindset that I would almost want something like that to happen to me as long as it wasn't too bad, you know, just to have that experience, just to know, just to experience it myself. But I don't really want it to happen. It's just kind of one of those, you know, curious moments that come up. Like, I wonder what that would be like too.
I saw Big Al the other day.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. He works over, you know, I won't say where he works.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I ran into him there.
Okay.
And the thing is, he was saying how he's been having some follow-up home lately.
Yeah, he's got that happens to him a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that everybody who's listening, I don't know if you know this about Chris, but he's also an HPI. He's an investigator, and you do the video work.
I do actually I'm the audio specialist.
I always do that to you.
You
I
do.
Say video,
yep.
But it's audio. Okay. So anyway.
No respect for the audio.
You know, the video people watch. You know, maybe I'm just more visual. I don't know what it is. But anyway, so that's why I'm asking him about these things. It's, you know, on our downtime, I'm always going to be needling Chris about his investigations because I'm too big of a chicken to go on my own.
They're not scary. I mean, the scariest part is sometimes, you know, you're stuck in the dark in a place you don't know. But once you kind of get over going into unknown people's homes and being there late at night in the dark, you kind of get over that scariness. It really goes away fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I went on a few and it didn't seem to go away for me, but it really didn't.
Well, I mean, you have to, you know, if you're gonna investigate, you have to get over that scared feeling because.
True.
If you go out and you're just scared from the environment, you know, it's like getting goosebumps or the hair standing up on the back of your neck is kind of a when you're an investigator, those are signs that you look for, You know, when you get used to feeling your body and feeling what a ghost feels like, you get used to your own body. But if you're scared, it emulates that.
Yeah.
So if you're scared on an investigation, you're not going to be able to.
That's
tell,
true.
You
and
know?
Plus, you might be kind of vulnerable for the attachments.
Possibly, I don't know. I don't know. You know, it's there's clearly some sort of emotional connection.
Yeah.
You know, there's emotional power that we can put off if they can pick up on.
Yeah, that's
whether
true.
That makes us more vulnerable or not, maybe.
Yeah, when I'm actually there, okay, here's the deal. When I'm on an investigation like what we went to on Volcanoville and all that, when we're there, I'm not actually, like, scared. Once I'm there, I'm okay. I think it's the idea ahead of time. Once I'm there, it seems like I'm like, wow, I wonder what so-and-so got, or I wonder, you know, for information, or like, you know, the EVPs and stuff like that. I would think that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the one who got the picture of the little girl in the closet?
The little girl in the closet was, I think that was John?
Yeah, maybe it was.
I think that was John. I think I was up there with him, actually, at the time. He actually, he also got a picture of me standing in the room, and I felt a cold breeze coming over my hand. And this was at Volcanoville, and I felt a cool breeze coming over my hand. And then John took a picture, and you could see a white mist actually coming out of my hand, and he did it twice in a row.
I saw that picture.
You saw? I haven't seen it since the day, but
yeah, that's where I saw it.
Okay, you saw it that day?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
And then there was something like a hand looking on the back of someone's head.
That one we debunked. It was actually it was the shine on her. The back of her hair was wavy.
Oh.
And
okay.
The light shined off it, and actually looked like four fingers across the back of her head where her hair was just curling.
You know, I got touched at that one.
You did?
Yeah, in the downstairs bedroom, or the office that was downstairs behind the kitchen. On the back of the collar. And that was actually, I mean, I've been spiritually touched before, but that's the first time that I was touched where it felt physical.
Okay. I've never experienced that. I've never had a physical touch.
You never have?
I've never been touched by a ghost. I think I've seen a few. There was one way out up in the mountains about a month ago that I think I saw the one that
wow.
The guy was haunted by. It was an old Indian spirit.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, thank you so much for listening to The Dirt. We had a great show. Thank you very much, Chris Singleton, for being here tonight, and for Bonnie Sorber and McNair Azard. It was a great show. Thanks, everybody, and we'll be here next week. Sort of.